Hello and welcome to the Blue Room on Radio City Talk. If you're listening on a Thursday to see Father Saul's breakfast show, like what I did there, Matt, because I completely forgot that we're just a podcast now.
So, not just a podcast, Dave. Well, much more than that.
Always much more than a podcast. You get full value for money because you don't actually have to spend anything with the Blue Room. Yeah, we're back this week. It's a somewhat short version given the fact that, well, you can just about think Everton sound like a broken record at the moment, can't you? So we don't want to risk sounding that way. But we have got that Leicester game to look forward to as well. That's coming up this Saturday. As usual, Ped has other media obligations that he can't take part in today's show. So he's missing once again. And Dave Bennett, sorry. So it's just me and Matt Jones this evening. Let's get straight into it, Matt. Norwich again. Performance at half time. I think we all sort of knew the writing was on the wall because I've never seen so many people take to social media and start saying these are going to score first 5 minutes of the second half. Lo and behold, it happens. I mean, what can you put your finger on what's going wrong at the moment?
I think they just lack killer instinct. That's the thing that's struck me in the last few weeks. This was different to the Palace game for me, because even though in that game we had chances and we didn't capitalise and we should have won that match as well, as we should have done against Norwich, this one was just rank bad finishing and just such bad profligacy in front of goal. And you just wonder if they get a little bit complacent. They go in at half time and they think, oh, we're playing well here. We've had 5-6 clear cut chances and more are guaranteed to come along. But what we've seen in the last few weeks against Bournemouth, obviously on Saturday, and even against Middlesbrough to some extent, when a team is down in a game and they're at home, they're going to come offline at half time. They're going to put you under pressure. And sometimes you just need to go into survival mode for those first few 5 minutes, clear balls away, make sure you're shallow defensively, just do the basic things right. And we just don't have that nous in terms of going forward, killing teams off, or at the back when we just need to see periods out like that. And once they scored and it was 1-1 again, another worrying thing for me was that we just never ever looked like scoring in the game again. All the confidence had gone from the team, all the patterns that we had in the first half, which were tearing Norwich to bits, had disappeared. And the fact that the manager, I'm sure we'll touch upon this later, seems unable to alter that when we do have a setback in a game. He seems unable to alter the patterns of play and get us back in a match. That's a big concern for me going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that this sort of mentality that seeps in, maybe complacency is the word. But the thing for me that really sticks out is the fact that it happened once, and you could forgive people for sort of thinking, well, that's just a rarity. You see things, freak results like that Bournemouth one happen. When you look at Palace, where we didn't finish our chances off in them ones, and okay, that one was a lot down to luck as well. But I sort of think that you get the impression when it keeps happening again repeatedly that you think it doesn't get addressed in training, or it's not getting addressed by the group or the manager, because they simply have an attitude of, well, oh, it couldn't possibly happen again. Do you know where they see it as a law of averages type of thing? And
yeah.
I'd hate to put anything or leave anything to chance like that. And I get the impression that that's what's happened. I think that you can have that complacency in a Premier League game. We've seen it firstly against Bournemouth, then against Palace, when you're not getting the rub of the green. And we did well to get a draw out of that for our persistence. That could have been a hard luck story, that game. It was to a certain extent, because we still should have won it. But the fact that we dug ourselves out of a hole, got a point out of it, was... You know, it was credit to the players for that, but this one has followed such a familiar pattern that you can't help but... I mean, I've seen the debate rage all week on Twitter, whether it's the players who are responsible for this or the manager, because the manager allows this mentality to continue. Where do you stand on where you would point the finger of blame?
I think in looking at that game in isolation on Saturday, I'd have to say both are culpable, because Martinez can set the team up as much as he wants, but there are things beyond his control, such as Lukaku missing a couple of good chances, Kone missing a couple of good chances. Those things, you can't necessarily control them. But in the bigger picture, it struck me this week when Bain said, we've only just started practicing defending set pieces. And you look at the games this weekend, and I think it was in six of the nine matches before Monday's game. I can't remember if there was one on Monday's game or not, but there was a set piece scored in six of those nine games, and I was looking through them, and they were all crucial goals. You'd either getting a team in front or getting them level in the match again, and you think that it's such a massive part of the game. And I was speaking to somebody this week about how set pieces, sometimes they are random, you can't control everything that goes on, teams have routines, etc., etc., but it's about minimalising those those that randomness and being prepared for things in matches. And at the moment, we just don't seem prepared. So that ultimately has got to lie at the manager's feet. The fact that he seems so... You've got to admire how stubborn he is in a way, because he's so convinced that what he's doing is the right way. And we see that in the way the team plays and the substitutions he makes. It needs something to go very, very wrong for him to address it. And I feel like that might be the same with these set pieces as well, because we've all seen in weeks gone by that we struggle with them. It's been a long time since we look comfortable with crosses coming into the box, whether it's the goalkeeper not coming for anything or the defenders not doing enough to head the ball away. And maybe now it's got to that point where he's thinking, right, this is a major issue now and we're going to start practicing it. But obviously, they need to practice it a little bit more going off Saturday.
Yeah, just a bit. I sort of look at a situation like this, and it's easy to draw comparisons with other managers, and I started doing it. I do it a lot anyway, comparing Martinez to other managers. Not just other managers from other clubs, but I look back to Moyes' time with us and think about us with set pieces, and he never gets really regarded as a pragmatic manager, Moyes. He gets regarded as sort of one-dimensional, and ultimately that's where his failings come from in the end. But having said that, with things like set pieces, he played the percentage as well. Like you're talking about, they're minimalising the risk. There's no way you can stop certain things from happening. You can't predict them. But the way he set us up to defend and attack set pieces, obviously we had Tim Cahill at the time, he was great defending them in as much as he was attacking them. I sort of think Martinez misses the boat with that a little bit, and he does just leave it up to chance, leaves it up to, well, if we defend properly, we should see out a corner. There's a very particular skill to set pieces, and I think you're coming up against managers like Alex Neil. I think he that would be a focus of his attacking sort of tactics at Norwich. Alex Neil will be set pieces. You look at a lot of sides in the bottom half of the Premier League, and that will be their go-to tactic. It'll be their source of most of their goals. So from that point of view, it's very, very naive of Martinez not to think of set pieces as a tool teams are going to use to batter us with. And they consistently see a goalkeeper, standards rooted to his line, all coming for crosses, and all the indecisiveness of it. You're seeing defenders who don't position themselves well. You start bringing up whether it should be zonal marking, whether it should be man-to-man marking. And the way they attack the ball on set pieces, how deep they drop for crosses. It's all a bit of a mess for me. And I know there's always been this rumour that he just doesn't have any of it in training. I mean, I think it was in Leon Osman's book, he doesn't touch set pieces. Well, that can't wash for me, simply. I think that's a massive oversight if he's not looking at anything to do with that, when it's the predominant reason why we're conceding goals.
I completely agree with that. And you can see there's times when I think Martinez sees an opposition set pieces as a chance for Everton to score a goal, because I think we've only got one player in the team, outfield player, who attacks the ball properly, and it's in Funes Mori. He's the only player I can think of in the Everton team who was always looking to go and win headers in the penalty area or the opposition penalty area at times when we've got set pieces. The only other one really who does it is Lukaku. And the fact that he is always on the halfway line when we get corners tells you all you need to know. He's not thinking about defending the corner and getting through that spell. He's thinking about getting up the pitch, getting it to Lukaku and trying to counter-attack. And that's great when it works. We scored a goal against Southampton, didn't we, like that earlier in the season to get 1-0 up in the game. But when you're going through a spell like we are at the moment, like you mentioned there, we've got a goalkeeper who's not very confident coming up his line. Our captain's not on the team. We've got a lot of young players in there. Sometimes you just need to get through those spells, don't you? Especially 5 minutes after half-time as well, when you know... Well, not even 5 minutes, was it? It was a minute after half-time, when you know the opposition's going to attack, you're going to put you under pressure. Just get him back in the box and get him to head the ball away, even if he doesn't have to mark anyone. You mentioned Tim Cahill there. He never used to mark anyone on corners for Everton. He used to just stand in the middle of the penalty area and he'd just go and head balls away. And that I think that's something he should look at. Lukaku this season has got a lot better in the air. He looks a lot stronger in there. Why not put Deulofeu up on the halfway line instead?
He's not going to have any influence
exactly,
on the corner.
Even
anyway.
Aruna Koenig's not great in the air. He can hold the ball up if you're trying to counter attack. Do something like that. Yeah. Just get Lukaku in the box. Just get him to head balls away. And it's got to a point now where he has got to... We're laying into them a bit here, but I don't think the changes that we need to make are too widespread. I don't think we need to throw the baby out with the bathwater here.
No.
But we have got options there in bringing Lukaku back and getting ahead in the ball. We've been saying it for ages and ages, but bring Joe Robles into the team to help amend this issue, because he's a goalkeeper granted, he's got his flaws. He comes and punches balls. He comes and catches them. He takes the pressure off the back four. And we've got a creaking defence at the moment in set pieces, which needs to have the pressure taken off them.
No, I completely agree. And like you say, I don't want to see him as if we are battering the team, because throughout most games, we're dominating games. Mm. We're just not putting teams away. And then when we're not putting teams away, we're getting caught out by inept defending. But, I mean, I want to pick it up on Jagielka in a minute. But that sort of skill, I mean, I think a Drogba at Chelsea for defending set pieces, they put the best header of a football in the middle of the 18-yard box to say, look, you're not marking a man. Just move towards the ball. Do your best to get your head on the ball when it comes in. And I think the frustrations lie in the fact that these are such simple things to us, Matt, that it just seems impossible for the manager not to be able to see them. And that's why it seems like we're getting on his back. But because the simplicity in it, if it was a wholesale thing, then yeah, okay, you get on your manager's back and you say, look, that's openly your fault. But because these are little tiny things, little tweaks to a system, little tweaks to set pieces, that's what the infuriating thing is, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and you can see it in all facets of his management, how stubborn he is. You know, look at the changes he made in the game at the weekend, leaving Aruna Kone on for the whole game. He did the same against Bournemouth, and as well as Kone's done this season, he's not a player who can do a full 90 minutes away from home, especially when teams are trying to attack you. And it always seems to me as though if he does make those sorts of changes in matches, he kind of sees it as a weakness. He sees it as this philosophy of put together this game plan so meticulously, it's not working. Mm-hmm. It's like he's made the mistake and he's worried about being portrayed in that way. Because you think to times in games over the past, you know, the past couple of seasons, Southampton, when he didn't make any changes at all in the match despite being 3-0 down, at Dynamo Kiev, when Anzalone Alcaraz had probably the worst 45 minutes I've ever seen from a player in Everton shirt, and he came back out after the break, he doesn't seem to make changes for me until it gets to a point where it is too far gone and it's too precarious for Everton, and he needs to act sooner. And because in his first season, he was proactive, wasn't he, his decisions? He made changes to alter the course of the game before they got away from Everton or before the opposition grew in momentum. And he just seems to have gotten a little bit too stubborn and set in his ways for me.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that first season, I remember sitting on our show saying, you know, applauding him for how he seemed to have this Midas touch with substitutions. I remember going away to Villa. We beat them 2-0 and he put Leon Osman on, and, you know, the crowd's up in arms at the time. Put him on. He went and controlled the game. Got assisted for Lukaku for his first goal and got the second himself, went and won the game 2-0. And you're like, that's a masterstroke. That is proper top management from a top manager. It's funny the way he sort of, the stubbornness, I don't know what it's born out of. I really don't know. I don't know whether it's in spite of something. I don't know whether he sort of discovered this. I mean, the comment he made about it's about the performances, not the results, was ludicrous. And may well have been taken out of context. I'm pretty certain it was, if I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. But there seems to be this obsession with purity with him, that he wants this utopia that I don't think's there. I really don't. No. I think he's searching for something that isn't there. And I'm just worried that it might be his undoing eventually, because if he keeps on trying stuff, okay, you know, they say, don't they, shoot for the stars, but if you get to the moon, it's okay. I don't know. I don't see that sort of thing happening with the players we have. The landscape at Everton now, I think, is very, very clear. We've got a fantastic crop of players. We sat here last week talking about how fantastic that group of young players is, that core of the Fab Four, whatever you want to call it, supplemented by good players around them. It's time we went and won something. It's time and to get them players to stay, which more importantly, I mean, that's the more pertinent issue. To get them to stay, you've got to show that we're achieving stuff and we're improving season on season, and it's to their benefit that it's happening. I just worry that might get a little bit lost in what he's trying to do at the football club in searching for this thing that might not be there.
I think what makes it more frustrating and probably makes Martinez more willing to buy into that is there are flashes at times when we do produce those sorts, you know, like you mentioned there, the word utopia.
We have them wow moments.
Exactly. The 30 minutes before half time on Saturday were as good as we've played all season, probably as good as I've seen any Premier League team play all season at all. The way we moved the ball, we pressed the ball, we just didn't give them a sniff at all, and we carved out so many chances. And I know we are being a bit doom and gloom, but the fact that we are creating those chances is a good sign. If you think back to last season at this point, we were drawing games, we weren't creating anything, we were nicking games, we were just about getting through them. So that's a positive. We've got good young players, that's another positive. But the team's still evolving, isn't it? We still need to get that killer instinct. We still need to add things to it. And I just feel like the manager can do a little bit more to help that process along.
Now, we've spoken about Funes Mori, touched upon him then a minute ago, in fact, and Stones and young defenders, maybe certain facets of the games that are missing that you would get in a Phil Jagielka. There's not too many sort of shouting from the rooftops that we've missed him too much, but when you see complacency seep in, when you see particularly goals from set pieces, your captain, who's a centre half, there's a line of thinking that says, hang on, this fella is desperately missed in many ways.
Yeah, I think he's definitely got to come back in when he's fit. And there are times when you look at players and you think he should be staying in the team. He's come in and done well, and I think Mori's done okay since he's been in. I think he started well. He seems to have got a little bit, I don't know if he's relaxed a little bit because he knows he's guaranteed a starting spot, whereas before he was trying to come in and impress. But the last couple of games have just been a little bit worried about him, and I think that's impinged on John Stones' performance in a way, because he's a player who's so front foot, he's always trying to win tackles, win headers, as we mentioned before. He leaves his centre-back partner exposed before, and leaves his centre-back partner exposed at times, and that's a worry. And I know Jagielka's not the most vocal of players. He's not going to bellow at Stones to get in position or bellow at his midfielders, but you can see him always quietly talking to people throughout the game, dragging people into position. But in times like this, and I said this after the Bournemouth game, when you've not got your captain, that's when you're looking for your other senior players to step up in the game. And Gareth Barry's our skipper at the moment, isn't he? But again, he's not the most vocal, but I don't really see him bellowing at players or dragging people into position. Which he should, because he's a Premier League winner. He's got the experience. He's played so many games in the league. Tim Howard's not coming off his line, claiming balls, taking pressure off the team. And even Aruna Koenig in the game on Saturday, he was wasteful in possession. You know, he's a 31-year-old forward. He should be doing a lot more. And these young players should be looking to these senior figures and the manager for guidance. And at the moment, they're not really giving it. So hopefully when Jagielka does come back in, obviously Baines is back in the team again now, that inexperience would be offset a little bit more by some more savviness from these sort of players.
I mean, talking just generally to friends and obviously social media, people saying we're not nasty enough in many ways. I think that's where that stems from, the fact of the leadership thing, because we haven't got that player, other than Gareth Barry, who does it anyway, but you haven't got that player who'll nick a snide free kick and take a booking and burn down 5 minutes on the clock.
No.
We haven't got that type of player on our side. And I do worry that being perceived as a soft touch, I think, and a few Liverpool fans have got on me about this week as well, about having that sort of soft underbelly where they're not savvy in games, they're not you know, nicking fouls, they're the horrible things that you don't really want to see, and you moan at every other club for doing them, but the fact that your club doesn't join the party makes you the one that stick out, and you lose out for it. And we don't have that kind of player.
Someone like Pienaar would be perfect, wouldn't he, in that situation? How many cheap free kicks they used to win round the box, take the pressure off us, get us up the pitch? But do you not think someone like Stephen Naismith could do that job?
Exactly.
I was watching that game. I was watching that game at the weekend, and he's a player who I think in games against Bournemouth and that one, he could have come on and done a good job for us. I know that left hand side isn't necessarily his best position, even though he came on against Chelsea and scored a hat trick from there. But I remember when we played Tottenham earlier in the season, and they were really putting us under pressure in that match. They were pinning us back, and he brought off Rom actually, and put Naismith in behind Kone, and he just won headers, got around their back four, slowed the play down, you know, gave away a few fouls as well, and just took any sting out the game. And it was a really understated and brilliant performance from him. And in the games like that, when you think, we just need to get up the pitch here, we just need to slow the game down, I think he would have been a much, much more useful player to us than Aruna Koenig. And there's a backstory there as well, isn't there, the weekend? Norwich tried to sign him in the summer. How often do those sorts of things just come back and just work out well for you? And I just thought that game was crying out for him there.
Yeah, you're spot on, absolutely. He's what I had in my mind when I asked you that. He has that sort of dogged determination, doesn't he, to get you up the field, to get you in their faces. And that one against Spurs, I actually love for the fact that he riled the Spurs players as well. And there was a nastiness about that. There was an edge to that game when he come on. And I'm all for him coming on in those situations. The thing that bothered me about it as well, Matt, when we concede goals, and again, probably goes back to the leadership issue, no one actually seems that bothered when we concede. You look at the body language of players, it's like, let's get the ball back to the halfway line, get on with it. There's nobody screaming, why weren't you marking him? Mm. I thought Funes Mori had that in his locker, to be honest with you. He seems quite a volatile character at times, but he sort of, when goals go in, I mean, it was great celebrating at Bournemouth, wasn't he? But goes, one puts, gets put past him at the other end, and there's not that sort of animosity, there's none of that anger that you'd like to see. I'd love to see someone in there, Gareth Barry, a senior figure, tearing strips off the man who's let his man go for them to score. I would love to see that.
That's it. We've got no talkers in the team, have we? There's no one. There's no one. You know, I sit in the glove of the street, and when you watch us playing out from the back or defending things, apart from the crowd, you can't hear anything. I remember when we used to have, you know, he's a player who had his faults, but Phil Neville, you could hear him, couldn't you, at the other end of the pitch, barking all sorts of people where to go. And you look at that goal we scored against Bournemouth in the 95th minute, and everyone just got so caught up in the celebration. They were all, you know, they were all elated. They were all with the fans. Gareth Barry was in with the fans celebrating. And you think, where's the player going? Dragging people saying, you know, we might have to defend a spell here. They're going to have a kick off. They're going to put it into the box. Stay switched on. Where's that type of player? Yeah. Where's someone G'ing them up after we scored at the weekend saying, come on, get back into this. We played well second half. It was such a confident side, and when we've got that momentum behind us and when we're going, it's brilliant, and we create chances and we score goals. But when someone just stops to halt us, we just go into a really bad shape. Yeah. We can't get out, and there's been times this season, obviously Norwich probably thought they could have won that game at the weekend, really, with the chance they missed in the second half. But there's been loads of games this season which you can think back to when we conceded the goal and then we conceded another one straight afterwards. And that does show a lack of leadership. It shows a lack of somebody organising the players and trying to get them through these difficult spells. And maybe certainly he might, you know, he said he's not looking to sign anyone in January, but maybe that is something he might look to bring in January. Just a player who is a bit more experienced, who can talk, who can get us through those tough spells and matches.
That's a topic I want to get onto in a minute, actually. But before that, I mean, you mentioned it right at the very start of the conversation. Lukaku, obviously scored 7 games on the run, 6 on the run in the league, and obviously he's up against Vardy, so it's the two Premier League's two most prolific hitmen up against each other on Saturday. But and I was talking to Graeme Sharp about this earlier this week on one of the Legend shows, and I was saying, you know, goal scorers, I mean, it covers all manners of sins when a goal scorer scores a goal, because that's it, that's their job, that's their bread and butter. Lukaku scored against Norwich, but And I thought he was still brilliant. He was still on the crest of a wave in terms of his team play. Missed a couple of really good chances, and I'm thinking we'd slate him for that had he not already scored. He does have to share some of the responsibility in missing those chances. I mean, the one where he tried the ridiculous Decanio scissor kick in midair, he could have threw his head at it, he could have threw his left foot at it. Yeah. There was one he threw his right foot at where he could have just left it to drag across to his left and stab it home. There's such a thing as overconfidence with strikers, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. But it's not worrying. It's not such a worry for me as such, because he is getting into the positions and he is, as daft as it sounds, he's missing chances. Yeah. Whereas last season there were times when he was so anonymous in games and the ball was bouncing off and he wasn't getting any serves at all. But I completely agree with you. I thought he had a poor game on Saturday, even though he scored. And, you know, after the match, all the talk was about this seven games in a row in which he scored. There's a couple of chances there he's got to finish it. And that's, I think Martinez was comparing to Aguero in the week, which he thinks is a bit hasty. And the fact another player in that situation of that class, like Aguero, I'm trying to think of another player, even someone like Giroud, you've seen him recently, they'll go on and get a second, or they'll go and get a third, and they'll just have that composure in the final third. And at the moment, that's something we don't have. When it all links together, and and we're flying forward and we put those patterns together, it's great and it looks brilliant, and we're as good as any team in the league going forward. But there were times in that game at the weekend when that word you mentioned there, composure, we were just lacking it. Someone, you mentioned Pienaar earlier in the show, someone like him who just gets, you know, always plays the right pass, does the right thing in areas. Someone like, I don't know, someone like Naismith in those situations, you'd back him to score because he's a cool finisher. Head in front of goal, yeah. So that's lacking, but that's part and parcel of such a young attacking team. And, you know, he'll hopefully learn from that, and the next game he'll want to carry on this streak he's on. He'll want to maybe get 2 or 3 as well.
Well, I suppose we're being a bit hypocritical here, because who'd have thought we'd be sitting here moaning at one of our strikers because they only scored one? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Just to score one at the time last season would have been a miracle, but There we go. But things that, changed.
Just, I don't think we can slag the attackers off too much this season, because we're the third top scorers in the Premier League. It's just those little moments, and that's what's so frustrating for me. We seem really close to getting it right, but the manager doesn't seem to have it in to make those tweaks to get us to really step forward.
Yeah, it does seem like a case of if plan A doesn't work, he doesn't seem to have the nous to go again and try and find a different way of winning a game. He'll just keep persisting with what he knows. That was really evidence against Crystal Palace, I thought, as well. Yeah, I just wanted to get on that. You touched upon it again there, the transfer thing. And he's been out again this week saying that he doesn't think he'll be adding in January. Now, I've got a couple of sort of perspectives on this, because I think for all the moaning and sort of, you know, uproar about Morales and Naismith, maybe rumours about him leaving, the fact of the matter is, this is an alien situation to us because we haven't had that many injuries this season. When they've come as well, they've come to the back line. And the thing for me is, I mean, how many times over the years have we sort of sat here and moaned about, oh, he's out injured and it's a makeshift side and you're struggling to fill positions with players. The bench looks like it's made up of the under-18s or whatever. We've come to a position now, I think, in the season, which is really, really strange to us. And maybe it's the reason why everybody's getting a bit carried away with players leaving who aren't happy. But it's a time of year when squads start getting utilised. I think I seen the graphic on the telly yesterday about Ranieri. They were saying Ranieri, obviously, is known as the Tinker Man. There's only Swansea have used less players than Leicester City this season, and that's 20. Leicester have only used 21 players or 22 players all season long. Now, you don't see Leicester City sitting there moaning and saying, oh, why isn't such and such on the bench? Why isn't Yuzhoa getting a game on the bench?
Yeah.
Obviously, they're doing fantastic without him. But there's a point, they know that player will need to be called upon. And there's a point for Everton here where Morales will be called upon, Naismith will be called upon. We're undoubtedly going to get injuries. Now, the transfer thing, I think you can look at it that way and think, well, hang on, we've got a bench there that's barely been used. These lads are going to be fresh. You know, you've still got a Pienaar to come back as well. You've got Gibson in there who can do a job. You've got Morales, you've got Osman, you've got experienced heads, you've got youngsters, you've got a good blend of squad players there. Great. I can see why you're saying we don't need to strengthen. The one thing that sort of does bother me about that, though, is Lukaku gets injured, and it's like a house of cards, it seems to me, because if he does go, then that's it. You can't see Kone holding the line up front on his own. Morales, you may have said, would be a viable option, but he hasn't had the game time or form. Naismith, similarly so as well. So I think there's a bit of a vacuum there in the middle of it all. That, yeah, okay, it's great saying that. If he has a crystal ball and Lukaku's fit, fine, I agree with you. But the fact of the matter is, it is Everton, and you could see that happening, couldn't you?
Yeah, it's a balancing act, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to see anyone leave if we're not going to get a replacement in. That's where I stand on it, because I don't think the squad's big enough as it is at the moment. I think there's three areas we need to strengthen desperately. I think we need to strengthen the goalkeeper, the left side of the midfield, and as you mentioned there, we need another striker as well. And to lose someone like Naismith, and we've touched upon his importance, potential importance in the squad earlier in the show, and how much of an impact he can have. He can come on, change games, he can nick a goal. I wouldn't want to see him go at all. And January, I think anyone who's thinking we've got a big enough squad just needs to look at how our January is going to play out, because we've got the two League Cup ties against City, either side of a game against City. You've got an FA Cup tie, and we play Arsenal and Chelsea as well, all in the space of 1 month. So you look at that and you think,
season defining month.
Exactly, yeah. And they're tough teams. We're going to be doing a lot of chasing the ball around. Players are going to get tired, and you're going to have to rotate your squad at times. And perhaps that's why he's not making many substitutions. He's trying to keep these players fresh when they do get.
That's one theory. I'm sure he'd be scraping the barrel if he had to use that one.
But no, unless he's got replacements eyed up, and they're definitely going to come in for these players, and it's rare we will get someone with the quality of Naismith or the quality of Morales to come in and fill the void in January, because teams don't want to sell players in January, do they? Especially you can have that kind of influence on a match. So no, not for me. If we're not going to bring players in, then keep the squad intact and add to it, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the thing that I'd love to see. I don't know if it's necessarily... Normally, January transfer windows have been used in the past by us to sort of lift mentality, and things have been down, or maybe we have a slow start, as we notoriously used to do. And you'd buy a cluster of players in January, and then that'd be it. Then it'd set us up for the second half of the season. Don't necessarily think we need that this time. just the odd supplements somewhere. Them three areas, as you said, absolutely key. But then again, I mean, you get Pienaar back. Okay, there's obviously going to be huge question marks over his fitness and longevity. But, you know, you can see a pathway through for Everton to get through, not adding numbers in January. And I never thought I'd be sitting here in a position to say that, ever. I'm normally the first to get on the back of the club and think, well, why aren't they doing more to add to this squad to make, you know, to make it the best that we've had? I mean, most fans, and they're probably beating down the radios or phones, whatever they're listening to right now, saying that, hang on, we've had the best squad or the best core of a squad that we've had in many a year. We need to go and throw numbers at it. We need to throw money at it. You look how well we've played. It's any subtle differences that have made the difference this season, subtle changes in matches that have made the difference between us winning and drawing. It hasn't been the difference between winning and losing. We've only lost three Premier League games this season. It's this draw thing that we need to get. I mean, Crystal Palace are above us in the table. We've lost more, double the amount of games. Yeah. It's this draw mentality, I suppose it is, the unwillingness to change. We've got a squad there. Let's use it before we start looking at spending probably what we'll need to use in the summer to supplement the squad. On to Leicester then, Matt. I honestly couldn't believe they beat Chelsea. And people will say, well, why didn't you? Because Chelsea are awful and whatnot. But I just thought if they were going to be the sort of novelty act Leicester that many people think they are this season and not the real deal and the ones who sort of go into free fall after an incredible start. We've seen it so many times over the years. If they weren't going to be that side, I felt that that was one of them games that they'd start that cycle of losing and maybe falling down. Anything but.
Oh, God, I think they're very much the real deal, personally. I know a lot of people expect them to fall away, but... The game which made me think they definitely are is when they went to Swansea and won 3-0 last week. Because even though Swansea have had a poor season, they've obviously got a bit of unrest there. You just look at that game and you think that's the type of game that a team like Everton, we slipped up there earlier this season. Yeah. And we went there, we dominated the game, but we just couldn't score. And they went there and played them off the park. Mahrez scored the hat trick, and the fact that they were able to. What they've been great at this season is playing on the break, haven't they? And much has been made about how teams aren't showing them enough respect in that sense. The sides are looking to go toe-to-toe with them. It's like, you have a go, we have a go. And the likes of Vardy and Mahrez relish that. But Chelsea didn't do that on Monday. They were willing to sit deep, soak up some pressure against them and say, come and break us down. And they had no issues doing it at all, did they? And at the moment, I think Mahrez is probably the standout player in the Premier League, isn't he? Vardy's obviously on fire, but... The one thing about them is that they do give you chances. They do concede a lot of goals. And without, I think Drinkwater went off injured on Monday night. I think he'll be a big loss for them when we play them if he's not fit. And I think Robert Hoop's suspended as well. So there's two players who've been key to them this season who we should be able to exploit those weaknesses in the side. But I'll tell you now, if we concede as much space on the break as we did against Crystal Palace and we did against Norwich at times, then they will definitely punish us in the game.
Yeah, it's a funny game, isn't it? Because obviously you want us to get out on the front foot, but that could be you shooting yourself in the foot as well, couldn't it? Leaving us so exposed at the back. I mean, that Palace game was scary to watch at times. Thoroughly enjoyable in an entertainment sense, but you watch Palace and how they attacked us when we left men forward, and it was dangerous. It was terrifying to see at times, and you think Leicester are potent. Leicester, who obviously scored a lot more goals. Palace are doing well, but not that well. You look at Mahrez as well. And again, I thought he'd be another flash in the pan, but the lad just keeps on going. He is absolutely fantastic. And you can see a big side coming in. Well, you say big side. Leicester are a big side at the moment. Yeah. It's no better. How do you see this one panning out? Would you like to set us to set up in that free flowing way? Because I'd like to see us a little bit more solid.
Yeah, I agree. I'd go a bit more pragmatic and hopefully McCarthy will be back in the team for this one, because even though I think Cleverley's done really well since he's been in the side, late in games he doesn't seem to quite have the same energy as McCarthy. He can't get around the pitch and put out fires quite as well, and that nearly cost us against Palace, nearly cost us against Norwich as well. So if McCarthy could come back into the team, maybe push Cleverley out to the left-hand side again, that's where Mahrez operates, isn't it? On their right, he floats down there, comes inside. And if you've got Kearney on that left flank for us and Baines there, who's still trying to get fitness, you could see him wreaking havoc. So having someone who's a bit more energetic like Cleverley on that left wing might tuck in a little bit more, makes a little bit more solid on that side. hopefully could nullify the influence of Mahrez. And I think what having Coney out the team as well could do is it could embolden Ross Barkley, who I think has been playing well recently, but he's been a lot more withdrawn. He's been a lot more safe in his passing and his running of the ball. Whereas if Martinez says to him, you know, there's no drink water for them in the team, they play a flat midfield four, you get close to Lukaku, you play in those spaces, try and affect the game a lot more in the attacking third, I think it could give him a major boost as well. And with those three in the team, Barkley, Lukaku and Delafay, we should have enough to score a couple of goals against them. It's just about whether we can keep them out at the other end.
Yeah, I've seen an interesting article on Baines this week, and he said for the first time in his career he's playing pain-free, which I thought was a massive statement considering how good he's been if he's been playing in pain. Having said that, I think he'll have all his ligaments, all his ankle ligaments, all his knee ligaments, all of his joints thoroughly tested and worked out against Mahrez at the weekend. Interesting one because, I mean, the only one game where I've seen Galloway get truly exposed this season was Man City at home. I actually felt sorry for him in that game because they really did do a job on him. And I get the feeling that could potentially be another one if he was in the side. So I am thankful for Baines being in there. Having said that, like you say, it's a fragile handle with Kerley and Baines at the moment, isn't it? So Leicester could well target that. I want to ask you before we finish up, obviously a lot made of Ranieri against Mourinho on Monday. Mm. And obviously your knowledge of European football is a little bit further than mine. And he's had his clubs where he's done a bit of a Sven Gordon Eriksson, hasn't he?
he's been sort of
along them lines where I'll turn up here for 5 minutes, get a few million quid and then bugger off.
Yeah.
What have you made of Claudio Ranieri?
Oh, he's brilliant, isn't he? Yeah. He's like your mate's grandfather, isn't he? Like a friendly.
Where does it
go? You go around and you're making a cup of tea, and he's always got a smile on his face like that. And he did a good job at a lot of his other clubs, and that's forgotten. Obviously, he was cast aside at Chelsea, wasn't he, a bit, and sent Mourinho slagged him off, and he's been to other places like Inter, and it's not really worked out for him. Greece, obviously, they were terrible under him at times. They lost to teams like the Faroe Islands and those sorts. But I don't know. It seems as though he's just kind of carried on what Pearson was doing, added a little bit of stardust to it here and there, and they're just you can see the way he is with them and how relaxed he is in his press conferences, how relaxed he is before the games. That's definitely coming across in the way they're playing. So I didn't think it was a very good appointment at the start of the season, but I've been proven completely wrong on it.
Yeah, I think I sat on this show actually and said that they're one of mine who I am have to go down.
Same, yeah.
Because of Ranieri, though, as well. So it's funny, isn't it, how some players...
It's great to see someone new up there, isn't it? Great to see a manager there who's been around, finally getting somewhere and doing a brilliant job with them. And, you know, as long as he don't win on Saturday, I'd quite happily see them go on and win the league because I think it'll be really refreshing for the whole division.
It's funny, isn't it, when I was having this conversation earlier this week that it's very, very easy in today's day and age to, you know, label a manager as a poor manager or label a player as a poor player. Fact of the matter is, it works some places and it doesn't at others. I mean, you look at Rodgers at Liverpool that one season, you know, he could have been the best thing. Well, he was the best thing since sliced bread. And then it is, there's just like a perfect storm at times in football. And I think that we're all too quick, aren't we, to just point the finger and say, oh, he's rubbish, him, I wouldn't have him. Mm. Fact of the matter, Ranieri goes to Leicester and you're thinking, well, he's probably just gone there for one final payday. He's getting on a bit. Does he really care? And then he's got them fighting at the top of the league going into the new year. Just mad the way it works, isn't it, sometimes?
Amazing, yeah. The fact that he's like that as well, free and easy, you know, he seems to be enjoying himself again. That's definitely coming through for the players because they've been the best team to watch in the Premier League this season, haven't they? The way they fly forward, they play with pace and power, trickery, and they just express themselves. And yeah, fair play to them. I've really enjoyed watching them this year.
Where do you see them finishing?
I think they'll cling on and finish in the top four.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
The stat they were doing on Monday Night Football, they were saying that I think it's when it gets to this stage, 100% of the teams that have been top at this stage with this points total do get in the top four. And I think the 9 points clear of fifth.
Yeah. So you mentioned there about players not being in the team as well. I think they've got quite a good squad, even though he's not used many players.
Absolutely.
They've got people like Inler there who signed from Napoli in the summer, who's a really good player. The lad Dyer from Swansea's on loan there this season. He's hardly featured. They've got Kramaric in the team. They've got a few good defenders in the reserves as well who did a good job last year. So they have got players who can come in and make an impact if needed as well. So just about keeping them two fit, isn't it? Mahrez and Vardy. If they keep them fit, they could potentially do something wonderful. But if one of them gets injured, they might drop down a little bit. But I think they've done enough now, and they'll cling on and finish top four.
Interesting. Funny, isn't it, that Esteban Cambiaso relied upon so heavily last season and sort of said, no, I'm too good for Leicester.
Yeah.
Could be seeing it.
Still doing a job, him though, at Olympiacos. He's still playing well, yeah.
Oh, I thought he went to the MLS.
No, no, he's at Olympiacos. He played against Arsenal in the Champions League this season, yeah. He didn't do very well in the other game, but at Emirates, he was man of the match.
Was
superb,
he? Yeah. I love that. I love players like that.
So they could be further by more if they got kept out of
Brilliant. So finally, Matt, prediction for this weekend?
I'm going to do everyone's head in and say it's going to be another draw. I think 2-2.
Yeah, it's one for both teams to score, I think. But I don't know. I get the impression that we're going to do someone over really, really well soon. I'd love it in many ways to be a team other than Leicester, because they are everyone's second team at the moment. But if it comes against them, I wouldn't be complaining.
Yeah,
I think we'll win 3-1 on the weekend. I think it'll be tough, but I can see us finding a bit of potency in front of goal. Right, you've been listening to The Blue Room on podcast, nearly said radio then. The best bit of me and Matt's discussion tonight will be on Steve Hothershill's kickoff show on Thursday morning, so listen out for that. Other than that, the main cast and crew of The Blue Room will be back in full force. I am reliably informed. At the same time, on Tuesday, I know we're out a day later this week, on Tuesday by 6 p.m. on iTunes and on Audio Boom. Until then, if you want to mention anything we've spoken about tonight, give us a tweet at The Blue Room EFC, and we'll be back next week.